Blog Talk Radio. For joining us at The Spiritual Frequency, a podcast about magic, metaphysics, and mysticism in the modern world. I'm Dana Jean Walter of Sonic Priestess, Camp Athena, and the She Shed, here with my lovely co-host and beloved bestie, Miss Tammy Casty of The Grown Ass Witch. Hello.
May the woo be with you.
And also with you.
So say we all.
The Cylons are coming. Hi, everybody.
Well, it's been a heck of a week here in the Twin Cities, and we are riding out the storm in good style and good humor. And I hope everybody out there is feeling well and feeling up to moving into the new paradigm with us, because we have decided, we have made the shift, and we are on the other side, living the life we have always dreamed of. And we're hoping you can come along with us for that ride.
I missed that memo. I'm like, bitch, what are you talking about? I didn't get there yet. No. Yes, that's what we are aspiring to do.
I'm actualizing that now.
Okay. Power thought.
We're dimension jumping right now. In 3, 2, 1.
It doesn't feel any different yet.
Well, you know, while we're talking about actualizing and making our dreams come true, this is the episode all about Dream.
That's all I'm singing, because we don't want to pay the royalty, because we can't afford it, because we have no job.
I mean, this is a job, but
this is true.
It's more of a
job of spirit.
Yes, a labor of love on a mission from the gods.
So dream. I got some.
Don't we have some crazy ones?
Well, there's two perspectives here. There's the light. There's the dreams you actually have when your brain is doing its thing when you're sleeping. And then there's the dreams that you have when you want things to happen in your life that you wish to call into being or manifest or what have you. So there's like the waking aspect of dream, and then there's the sleeping aspect of dream, which are all part of the same thing if you work them right. You work them with skill, right?
Well, it's all designing. It's all architecting. It's all architecting. It's not a word. I'm so ashamed.
Well,
of
we have poetic license, so architecting is a word. There.
But while I'm stealing words that aren't words, we'll just say that it's imagineering.
Fantastic.
Well, got that one right. That's a great word. So yeah, we're going to talk about dreams today, and we're going to go into the kind of dreams that you have when you are, we'll say, in a hypnotic state.
Yeah. What kind of dreams are you aware of?
I sat down and kind of like went down and made a little list of like all the different kinds of dreams that I could think of. And these are things that maybe words and vocabulary that I might use, and I'll try and explain. And like, you guys call them whatever you call them, right?
Because we are not experts on this subject other than having dreamt as long as we can remember.
Yeah, I can only talk about things that I know about personally. I mean, I can talk about anything, I suppose. I could just talk shit all day, but that seems like a whole nother episode.
I like talking shit with you, though.
Yeah.
It's good shit.
So, dreams. For me, my most common kind of dream is actually daydreaming. And I think I read somewhere that the average person spends anywhere from 70 to 120 minutes a day engaged in daydreaming.
Wow.
So that's sort of a hypnotic state where you're semi-awake and maybe you have a really compelling thought or a memory or a little fantasy that runs through your head that you just can't quite let go of. You can't let it be a fleeting thought, so you start flushing it out and giving it some more meat on the bones, and the next thing you know, you are daydreaming and you are somewhere else. And maybe that happens for a couple minutes at a time. Maybe it happens while you're driving your car, sitting at a red light.
Which is terrifying when you think about it. I used to do a lot of my spiritual work in my car when I drove and had a car. And it was I'm operating a vehicle at extreme speed. And yet I am totally not here. I am in the realms of the dreaming, waking dream. And I should be in a wreck. But thank you, angels. I am not.
I think driving is a hypnotic state.
Well, it's a total brain entrainment. Yeah, That's why with like the sonic work that I do and have done with Pirates of Dreamtime and with the Idyssey, we have disclaimers on our albums that says, do not play this album while you are operating a motorized vehicle at high speed. Don't do it.
Yeah, you've been warned.
Yeah.
So for me, my daydreams are not visual. They're all auditory. They're books on tape.
Interesting.
So I get...
And the reason for that is because?
I have a special brain. I call it mind blindness, which sounds really morbid and strange. There is a scientific term for it called anti-phantasia, which is based on Disney's Fantasia. It's a weird term, but it just means I don't see pictures in my brain. The only time I do see pictures in my brain is when I'm asleep and dreaming.
Fascinating.
Weird. Weird brain.
And do you know a percentage? I'm just totally putting on the spot of how many people have this.
I think it's less than 10%. I think it might be somewhere around 3% of the population.
Wow.
There's some research studies going on across the pond, and I have been in contact with some neuroscientists who are doing studies on that. So I'm on the list. If ever they should need more candidates, I would be more than happy to go to the UK and participate in that. Just putting that out there.
So for example, if I were to say, picture an apple, you as a chef know what an apple looks like.
Right.
Right?
I can describe an apple to you, but it's not because I'm seeing one in my head. It's because I have created a file in my brain, an audio file in my brain, that tells me all the data I know about apples.
Bizarre.
So if you listen to a book on tape and listen to somebody describe an apple and the properties of an apple, that's what goes on in my head.
But then when you see an apple in real life...
I know it's an apple.
You know it's an apple.
And I don't have any difficulty identifying people's faces either. I don't have face blindness. Like, I know what my friends look like. But if you ask me to describe you, I couldn't describe you in enough detail that somebody could draw a picture of you.
But you could describe, like, my personality and, you know, like, how you feel when you're with me.
Right. Like, if people could draw you based upon an energy profile, I could give them a lot of detail. But things like... I'm not good at distance, so I'm not good at telling people height. I'm not good at calculating mass, so I would have a difficult time saying somebody's weight or approximate weight. I might have to get up and gesticulate. Like, they're this much taller than me, you know, or they're this big around, but I couldn't tell you what those measurements would be. My brain doesn't understand that. So
fascinating. But in the dream time, you don't have that problem.
Yeah, but in the dream time, there's no problem. I see, hear, smell, taste sometimes. It's really, I love dreaming. It's where I get a great deal of my spiritual work done, in a dream state.
But when you're doing the daydreaming with the audio file, does that ever refer to your dream time?
Sometimes. It seems like I'm doing pre-work. Mm-hmm. So maybe what I'm doing is I'm writing the monologue, and then when I go to sleep at night, I'm shooting the film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty interesting, and I get a lot of details. And quite frankly, most of the time, daydreams and stuff that turn into... nighttime dreams for me, they tend to be sex. So I think I'm just normal that way.
I don't really have a specific cognitive awareness of daydreaming. I know that I go into trance stuff, like I was forementioned with the driving. I don't necessarily see pictures and be like, I'm off in another realm while I'm daydreaming and driving this car. It's more thought process and getting data dumps.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like, I joke sometimes about message from the big head.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider that a kind of Akashic record dump about things. And it does arrest me. Like, I'll be doing my thing and then all of a sudden, sorry, a message from the big head. And it just, like, crams into my cranium if I'm not blocking it. And I just get this incredible amount of information.
So I have to ask you this as somebody who writes to somebody who writes, because we've written together.
Yes, we have. And we've written well together.
A lot of the dialogue and stories that I've written have come to me as a result of a daydream.
Really?
So let's say we were writing about the Baroness and Islinda having an adventure together.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I would start thinking about, oh, we need to like move this plot along
Quit
to the next thing.
Out there, dude. Come on now.
We need to move the plot along to the next thing. What kind of conversations would they be having about this right now? And then I let myself daydream, and those conversations would reveal themselves.
Ah.
So I'm not sure if that's a daydream or if that's ascending from a muse.
See, that's another thing that I think is difficult for me to discern, because I interact with the muse quite a bit. So I'm not quite sure if that's a daydream mechanism or if that's a, oh, I loathe to use the word channeling mechanism, but I'm just going to call it a dump, like a download dump.
Well, because I think sometimes the stories aren't mine. I'm just being given the story.
Sure.
Like, here's the story, and be the mouthpiece for the story. And I'm wondering if there are other people out here who write, if that's how stuff happens for them. Like, the characters come to life, and they lean in and they tell you their story. Like, here's the story. And sometimes I think it's just a daydream. And sometimes I realize, oh, no, this isn't a daydream. This is something that needs to be written down. This is something that's going somewhere. For me, daydreams tend to be pretty short. You know, maybe I'll spend 5 minutes. That's a long daydream for me. It's 5 minutes. But when I'm getting story content poured into my head, sometimes that's 20, 30 minutes that I can sit and, like, roll through monologue and dialogue.
Yeah, see, I don't have, like, to me, daydream has been this, like, Walter Mitty kind of assumption.
Okay.
That people have that in a daydream, and I don't function that way. So I can't necessarily, like I said, I don't have some conscious awareness of it as much as I do entrainment, you know, and then getting that dumped. Like, I always get dumped on when I'm in the shower, naked and wet with nothing to write with. And so I said that back
in the bathtub crayon
camp, and a bunch of people were like, oh, have you heard of shower crayons? They're the best. And so I got a bunch of shower crayons, and I seriously used the shit out of those. And then sometimes people would open my shower and they'd come over, and there's all these writings like madness. Then they look at me going, are you okay? Like, oh, that's just spirit talking to me in the shower. I have crayons now, so now I can actually record what they're saying. But, you know, is that daydreaming? Maybe.
So, sometimes my daydreams are morbid fantasies. I'll tell you one, and I will not use any names. A long time ago in the land before time, when I worked in local politics in a particularly lovely building up on a hill here in St. Paul, I used to see lobbyists as part of my job, having appointments with them, talking to them about their objectives and their agendas and whatnot. And there was a particular lobbyist who would come in, and he would sit on the arm of the couch in my office, where his crotch would be level with my eyes, right? While I'm sitting in a chair comfortably, he could have sat on the couch, he could have sat on the other chair, but he chose to sit on the arm of the couch where his crotch was level with my eyes, so I started referring to him as Lord Ballsack. And I used to have daydreams about defenestrating Lord Ballsack. They were particularly amusing daydreams because my office was on the ground floor. So I don't know where in my fantasies I was leading him up to the top of a tall building to push him out of a window, but they were very vivid daydreams.
Did you see or did you hear? Because you don't vision that.
Like. Right. So it was like hearing it narrated about pushing him out the window.
Who is your actor, the voice actor?
Oh, my God. So who was it? I think that my narrator in my brain, you guys are going to love this, is Helen Mirren.
Ah. Nice.
Especially when I'm defenestrating people. She shows up with a lovely accent and does it with all sorts of class. So
nice.
That's my crazy daydream story.
What other dreams do we have?
Then there's like your regular nighttime dreams, the ones that you have when you're in REM state And I think those are the ones that your brain is just using to deal with all of the data that you've taken in all day and process it and determine whether or not it's useful and give you some wish fulfillment. Those tend to be dreams that maybe, for me, I don't particularly remember a lot about them. I know sometimes I go to sleep and I wake up and I think I didn't dream. I know I dreamed, and it was probably just REM dream state stuff that didn't yield anything in particular that I needed to work on.
I think that's the place where you have those certain segments of dream, like you're doing your job and some weird element comes in. I remember when I first was in college, I was working at a credit union and I was an encoder. So I would take checks that had been written and I would 10 key in the amount,
okay,
so that it would complete the little numbers on the bottom that look like nonsense, but they actually mean shit.
Okay.
So I would have this big machine that I had to look at the check, make sure that it, and then you have to balance everything out, so to make sure that it was correct, type it in, put the check through the slot so it would go and print the rest of the information, and then I have to bundle the checks with the tape and send it on so that they could rectify accounts, blah, blah, blah. And in one of these dreams in this state of REM, I was trying, like people kept handing me things to put through this small slot that the check goes through, because it was like how you run your credit card kind of thing, like a swipe. So they were handing me like tennis rackets and like three-dimensional objects that should not go through a little slot. And they're like, hurry up, faster. And it was just one of them things where I'm like, why is this happening? And that's where I think those kind of dreams happen, where they don't necessarily, like you said, yield anything.
Right.
Except just awful.
Just weird stuff going on in your psyche, right?
Yeah, this is dumb. This is dumb.
Let's see. What else have I got? Lucid dreams, which I think we can talk about for a while. So let's come back to that topic. Those are the ones where you know you're in a dream and you can change stuff.
Yeah.
Or you can control the things going on in a dream. And Dana is an accomplished lucid dreamer. And I'm sure she's got an awesome story or two about that. Do you want to tell one now? Or
no, I'll hold that.
I'll hold on to that. Let's see, the other false awakenings. These are my least favorite kind of dreams.
Oh, those are the worst when you have to pee. Fuck.
So those are the dreams where you dream like they're very detailed and accurate about your day-to-day routine. So like you'll dream you get out of bed and you go to the bathroom and you brush your teeth and you get dressed and you get your car keys and you go out to the car to go to work and then you wake up.
And you're peeing yourself. or the ones where like, oh, I got to get up and pee. So you'll get up and you'll go to the bathroom and you'll do all the business to get down on the toilet and then you start to relieve and you all of a sudden you go, oh, I'm in my bed.
I hate those dreams. I hate the ones.
It's an adult thing sometimes too, people. I'm telling you. Freaking world am I in? Oh, I'm not in the one with the actual toilet. Yeah, been there. Sucks.
Yeah, those are not my favorites. Of course, nightmares. I haven't had like bad nightmares as an adult. They happen very rarely. When I was a kid, I had horrific night terrors. I used to like get so scared that I would try and climb into bed with my parents and they started locking their bedroom door. So I used to sleep outside on the floor in the hallway outside of their door when I had bad nightmares. And I think we all know what those are. You know, it's like it's scary stuff that you don't know you're dreaming and you don't have any control over it and they don't make sense. And yeah, it's bad.
I can probably count on less than 10 fingers the number of like paralyzing nightmares I've had in my lifetime, which is pretty awesome. One in particular that sticks out at me was early in my path work on the pagan heathen path. And I had come across a god who shall not be named in the Celtic pantheon, and he's a fucking badass motherfucker, like scary. And he had occurred in one of my favorite television shows in the 80s, so that's kind of when I was exposed to him. So then when I was like in the late 80s, when I was kind of like stepping out of the Christian realm and having my eyes open to this, I got referred back to this particular god, and I went, oh, and I had this horrific nightmare with him, and I think now that he was trying to talk to me, but back then it was terrifying. Like I even invoked Jesus like in the dream to get the heck out, because I was stuck,
because that archetype represented something else for you.
Yeah,
right?
but it wasn't like, oh, it's the devil. It was like, I think what it was pure, divine, masculine vitality that was just in my grill. And I think because I have my own issues with my sexual power, I think that's what it was trying to get in my face. And I was like, abso-fucking-lutely not. You know, and I was not good at the banishment process. Jesus helped a lot, so thanks, dude.
I have a couple that I've had as an adult, and I think one of the hallmarks for me with nightmares is that most of the time my brain has developed a unique ability to let me know it's a nightmare. Usually I dream in color, but when I have scary dreams, they tend to be black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's my brain telling me it's not real, dummy. I have had a nightmare where I went into the kitchen in my childhood home to get a glass of water in the middle of the night, only to discover that the kitchen floor was writhing with snakes, just snakes, like 2 feet deep.
Yuck.
And climbing up on the counters because I was not going to be deterred from my mission to get my glass of water by the snakes.
And I love snakes, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But that's too many.
Right, but it was a horrific amount of snakes.
I would be more concerned about hurting the snakes trying to get to the water. That would be more horrific.
Like climbing up on the counters. But you have to understand, I grew up in Florida where the snakes are mostly poisonous most of the time.
And will kill your ass.
Yeah.
And drop out of the trees on your head.
So like rattlesnakes, coral snakes, water moccasins, that kind of stuff. So there was an ingrained respect for the vipers. More so than a fear. My mother has a horrific, irrational fear of snakes. Like, she will, if she sees a snake while she's driving down the road, she will swerve in the car to hit it and then throw the car in reverse to make sure it's dead.
Wow.
I, however, just have a profound respect for them. So that's one of those nightmares for me. Like, I saw it in black and white, and I knew, oh, this is just a nightmare. The most recent one I had, because of my supernatural life, thank you so much, Eric Kripke.
Thank you, Eric Kripke.
Was that it was end times. I was in an attic with a trap door. So we had to climb up a ladder to get into the attic with my parents, and who were both, at that point, older and feeble. I had managed to get them up in the attic, and we were hiding in the attic because the monsters and the demons were out just raging. And they had gotten into the house, so I was sitting on top of the trap door, trying to keep the trap door closed while the monsters were trying to open the trap door to get us. And I invoked this little light of mine in this dream to drive them back, right?
That's frequency, man.
So I start singing this song to get them back, and then the dream went black and white, and then I realized it was a nightmare and that I was okay. But I would distinctly remember calling you like the day after this dream and going, what the hell, the demons are fat on the land, what are we going to do?
I remember that.
So scary, but just nightmares, just the brain trying to work through some stuff. And for me, it's like they tend to be episodic and related to stress for me, for the nightmares. So usually I have to sit down and take some time to be like, okay, what am I freaking out about that's driving this dream?
Mm-hmm.
I've had weird nightmares with stuff like my teeth falling out or my hair falling
out. Which is a thing.
Yeah. But, you know, being like, what is that about? You're like, if her teeth are falling out, I'm like pulling out these. I'm sure people mean well when they write these almanacs of dream interpretations, but they're not
that. They don't fucking know.
They're not useful, you guys.
No, I've yet to find. Looking just behind us is our spiritual library here at Greyhaven, and I have a couple dream analysis, glossary shit dictionaries, and I don't know. I'm pretty much sure that I know what things mean to me when I need to know what they mean to me, and sometimes it takes me years to figure out a dream. You know, and then I go, oh, because I. Again, I think because dreams take us into potential parallel realms or time dimensional shifts or inside of our psyche that there's no past, present, future. It's all happening at the same time. So I think sometimes we get information that we're not necessarily ready to interpret. But the seeds are planted so that if we need it later, we'll know.
Well, yeah, like there's an expression that like you don't have to be ready for the truth to be working on you.
Mm-hmm.
Once you hear it, it starts going to work. It doesn't matter if you were ready. It's working on you. And I think that's what happens sometimes with these dreams. Like, we're not consciously ready, but it's working on you on a subconscious level where there are parts of your knowledge base that you can't access consciously that are working on problem solving.
Well, and I also believe that is a place where our oversoul can talk to us in symbolism a lot easier in the unconscious mind, you know?
Well, and that brings me to sort of like the last kind of like group of dreams. And it's hard for me to separate them because they may kind of just be different flavors of the same thing. It depends, I guess, on your personal experience. But for me, so prophetic dreams, recurring dreams, and episodic dreams are often the same dream.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you'll have a prophetic dream that ties into your precognition or your psychic ability, and maybe it will be one that repeats itself and it's strong on symbolism and archetypes. And sometimes they're nightmarish and they don't go away until you've resolved whatever the underlying issue is. And when they're episodic, it means like you don't always get the whole story in one dream. You get bits and pieces along the way. And for me, those three things are interchangeable. And it's often the same dream that's being episodic. It's coming in bits and pieces. It's recurring because maybe I haven't resolved the piece yet. And then there's a prophetic element to it as well. And for me, when my dreams are prophetic, I tend to wake up as soon as that dream is done.
Oh, like, yeah.
Out of a dead sleep, wide awake. And that's when I have to start writing stuff down or picking up the phone, calling people because I had a dream about you and I need to know that you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what your experiences are with any of that, but I would be totally interested. I mean, I do kind of know, actually, that's a lie. I know. I just want her to tell you guys.
Well, for me, like, I have, again, I agree with you on the three kind of interchangeable definitions. I think it's really difficult for our human brains when we know so little about the brain, and there's so much that we can do that's a double-edged sword about how you can program a brain, like the Manchurian Candidate kind of crazy, you know, MK6 or whatever.
MK Ultra.
And then there's the, like, actual, like, the universe is fucking talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I was, like, 5 or 6 years old, 6 was a very pivotal year for me. I got booted out of church when I was 6. Got booted out of Sunday school for being a rebel, and which is a whole other show. So I started having these end-timey / apocalyptic dreams that were always, and then when I look back over the course of most of my young adult life, because I haven't had one since I was in my mid-40s that I remember. So it happened, we're talking decades.
Okay.
Multiple decades. So the formula for the prophetic dream is always the same structure. I emerge out of darkness into the light. So I can be coming out of a building into the outside. I can be, sometimes I'm coming out of rubble underground up to the surface.
All right.
So that's always the same, but the structures are always different. I've never had this dream the same dream, but I've always had the story be the same. The story is, I emerge from darkness to light, and I am informed that 2/3 of the population of the planet are gone, and we are in rebuilding mode, and I am on the team to start doing the heavy lifting to rebuild and restructure what's left of humanity. Big, huge thing for a 6-year-old to comprehend, right? And
I don't know what's going down downstairs.
You're breaking China. We did that last week.
Yeah, that was last week.
But the means by which it happens, sometimes it's weird, crazy goat men have taken over and there's this huge epic battle. And one time it was angels were present helping us and putting us all to task. And another time it was an earthquake that happened colossally throughout and smashed everything. And one of the last ones I had, probably back in, it was 2001, I was out of town and was at the Renaissance Festival in Bristol with my then boyfriend. And I was in the hotel and we were leaving that morning and I had this horrific dream that was the same and he was in it. And it was this, anytime in my dream I'm at the farm, which is the farm I grew up on, that's my lucid dreamer telling me, you need to pay the fuck attention because you're in your sacred ground family dream place.
The ancestral home.
The ancestral home. Everything has meaning here. Pay attention. So we were there, which was one of the first times any of these series of dreams put me in my ancestral land. So my lucid dreamer thing literally sat up in bed and went, the fuck? Pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that we were all losing 2/3 of the populace is because almost every volcano and then new ones was erupting at the same time. And you could see this glow of red and orange, and it was nighttime, and everywhere you looked on every horizon was just glowing red. And I looked at my boyfriend and I said, I'm not doing this this time. This is the only prophetic dream I've had where I refused to do the work that needed to be done. And he was a military guy, so he went off to some bunker to try to find out what we're supposed to do, and found this, and I went with him, and we found this bunker, and it was all these military people and governmental people who were just hiding like little boys in this bunker going, we don't know what to fucking do. And other people were like standing on the field going, the aliens are going to come and save us and rapture us. And I like looked at him. I'm standing between my house and the garage, and I said, I am not. And magma was coming. It was so hot. And magma was just coming, and he was sweating in his Navy uniform, officer uniform, and I was standing there on the driveway saying, I am not going to watch my pets dissolve into liquid animal. We just need to fucking Jonestown Kool-Aid this fucker and be done. I'm done. It was, and I woke up all like flushed and bugging, and he's like, babe, because I talk in my sleep.
Yep.
And he's like, babe, like, what was it? And then we went to breakfast at the hotel, and I was telling him about this dream, and we were talking in very hushed tones, as hushed as I can be, and there were these two old elderly gentlemen who were at the table next to me, and they were entranced, and their eyes were super big, listening to me, and Chris like, are you going to be okay? And I'm like, yeah. And then I had a healing with somebody like a week later, and I told him about this dream, and I said, I don't know if it was the rapture or what. He goes, no, I didn't tell him shit about the dream yet. And he said, oh, it's more like the rupture. And I looked at him, I said, what the fuck did you mean by that? And he's like, well, wasn't it a dream? I've never met this man in my life. And he's like, well, you know, and all the magma and the volcanoes. And I was like, shut the fuck up. Damn, you were a Kripke. So, like, I've had some, like, big shit come my way with these dreams. But this idea that 2/3 of the population is always gone and we're rebuilding. And like I said, I haven't had a dream like that since I refused. In that one, because I was just done 40 years of this shit, and I was like, nope, I'm out.
I know. And then your little ball of love and chaos shows up one day and says, so I think I need to invoke Pele for this photo shoot. And I go out on the photo shoot onto the property that we're at, and lo and behold, in like the most bizarre place, I find this tree that had been struck by lightning, and I'm climbing up in this tree and getting covered in soot and ash, and I come out of this, you guys, there's a hilarious picture of me with just soot all over the palms of my hand.
Fucking beautiful.
And this grin on my face, like, yeah, I burned your village. So,
where's my blood beer? Yeah, I mean, life is crazy, and dreams are really, I think, an important aspect to humanity understanding its purpose and navigating how we do this here. I know too many people who do not remember their dreams and do not do the work. It's a skill to remember your dreams. It's not it was a gift to me when I was young that I could remember in such great detail. My friends and I would sit down in the band room, seventh period, just be like, and I'd be telling them my dreams, like, and then the taste and it smelled like this and he was wearing velvet and all that. They're like, how do you remember all this? But as I've gotten older, even as detailed as I have been with my dreams, my brain is not holding on to them the same way since we passed 2012. So something has shifted on the planet frequency-wise, and I don't know if that's we're just remembering them deeper and we don't need to recall them, but I think I have to get back into my skill set.
Yeah, I'm 100% all in on leveraging the technology that we have available. As much as I say don't sleep with electronics next to you, if you happen to break that rule and sleep with your phone next to you, have your voice memo thing open.
That's
and
the best thing.
When you wake up, just grab it and just start spilling that stuff out. Like, you can do that on the way to the bathroom to deal with your biological necessities so that you don't lose it. Because that's what happens to me. It's like, I get up and the urge from the bladder is so strong that by the time I get back to the bedroom, most of the detail of the dream is fading. or I've started to busy myself with feeding the dog or watering the plants or blah, 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 blah. I do a thing, though, since I hit my 40s, it's really weird. I do a thing where I will wake up at about 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's the liver rise time.
And take,
Chinese medicine.
And take care of biological necessity and go back to sleep. And then I'll wake up a couple, 3 hours later. And during that window, there's really vivid dream stuff going on. So I have to remember that second time when I get up, one, that it's the second time that I'm getting up, and hopefully it's not one of those stupid false awakening dreams, to grab my notebook and write some stuff down, or to grab my phone and dictate some stuff so that I don't lose things, because the memory is so short. Once you start activating your conscious brain,
it rubs it all out.
Yeah, the busyness of life knocks out all of the work that you've done. And I feel like I've done work.
Oh, there are times when I will wake up after a 7-hour, 8-hour sleep, and I am effing exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my roommates will be like, you slept for like 7 hours. That's super long for you. And I'm like, I was running the entire... I was pretty much on a... I think I was in another parallel universe, and I didn't get to sleep. I just went to work somewhere else. That's what I think happened.
Well, I've been spending a lot of time in the library lately, so...
The library.
You guys, I need to know, like, collectively, collective consciously, collective dream-wise, how many people find themselves in a library in their dreams. And it's not like a normal library. It's a library of sort of like arcane knowledge and secrets and things that maybe you're not supposed to know, but you're there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a weird thing in my dreams, and I hear that it's uncommon. But, you know, I'm not an expert. I didn't really do any research on this other than reading things on the internet over the years. But there's, let's just say, a belief that people can't read in their dreams. I can totally read in my dreams.
Oh, I can totally read. All the time. So, in multiple languages.
Yeah, so when I go to the library, I just pull things down off the shelves in the library and start reading things. And the problem I have is that's the stuff that fades the fastest when I wake up, is whatever I've read. So I have to start getting that down immediately. I need to, like, come up with a shorthand for, I was in the library, and I pulled down this book, and blah, 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 blah.
So I'm just having a dream recall right now that what I feel is a prophetic dream or a dream from somebody, but it wasn't necessarily a part of, like, my ongoing apocalyptic stuff. And it had to do with the library, and I pulled down this big book, and it was one of the rare times my lucid dreamer said, what the fuck is with the no writing? Because it was an entire picture book.
Okay.
And it was one of those big, like, fat coffee table books but was more like a photo album size, like antique-y photo album size, because it had leather binding and shit.
Sexy.
But it was. But when you turn the page, it was like you were watching a little YouTube video.
Okay.
Okay. But it was pictures, like it was still, and then when you focused on it, it would come to life and tell you the story, as opposed to reading it.
Oh, I think I've seen those books.
Okay?
Yeah.
Fucked up,
yeah.
Right? I mean, cool, but
wonderful.
Fucked up.
Some weird Harry Potter shit was happening.
Completely. And it wasn't in black and white or sepia, it was in full-on bright color, because I know that it was kind of like these kind of vampire, glammed-up royalty people. And in the book, it was a story about the, you know, bad guys and gals and the good guys and gals. And I was reading this, like, archetypal battle story of their, you know, whatever. And I'm flipping these pages and getting the history, and they're kind of sort of standing. Some of them are in the library standing in front of me. And then I look at it, and I turn the next page. And I hear this, it was almost like a BTS video, like a behind the scenes, because then it was a conversation that these two factions were having where they're like, okay, we're bored playing the bad guys now. It's our turn to play the good guys. You've been doing it longer than us. Like, you need to, like, let us start. I'm like, fine. So then they flipped sides, and then the book changed, and I got to see the behind the scenes glimpse at the switch, which I wasn't supposed to see very clearly, because all of a sudden they were all standing around me and just looking at me like, what the who? And I just looked up at them. I said, you are all fucking lying your faces off. Fuck you. I was pissed. And then this woman stepped in and she grabbed my hands and she slammed the tome closed up vertically. and yanked it out of my hands, and she goes, "You are out." And poof, she turned a page of the dreamscape, and the next thing I know, I am not where I was. I was like booted out of the library. Your privilege has been revoked.
Oh no, I would not like that. I would be mad.
And she was pissed that I saw what I saw, and I was like, I literally woke right up and I was like, oh, I was not supposed to see that. Busted. Who are these people? Yeah, it was fucked up. I was like, is this a Mount Olympus thing? Or what was it?
It's a very Lords of Amber kind of thing.
Oh, total Lords of Amber. It was like total Amber situation, but fuck.
You guys, if you haven't read those books,
immediately. You have time. Roger Zelazny, Chronicles of Amber, on it. All of them.
I mean, if you are a juggler, if you love a juggler, if you've found yourself eternally pledged to a juggler, there are some specific characters in this book that you need to read about so that you can understand the inner mechanical workings of a juggler's brain. I'm telling you, really good knowledge to have.
And also, gosh darn it, you know, I'm just having an epiphany right now.
All right, let's go. Hear it.
This is a totally another show, but
that's fine.
You know when they when they shape shadow?
Mm-hmm.
Hyper sigil.
Oh!
Fuck me running. Dude! All right, sorry.
By the way, those of you who are not from Minnesota, fuck me running is a very Minnesotan saying. And usually it has some add-ons depending upon your friends. Ours was with a chicken shoved up my ass.
Anyway, that's I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave that veiled in mystery for you, but that was for us.
Yeah,
so. Thanks, Shree.
Woo!
So the dream aspect of, I think it's really hard sometimes to know, when are you going crazy? When is this the universe talking to you? When is it your psyche talking to you and your unconscious mind? And being able to discern all that has a lot to do with your skill. And your skill has to start with, you just have to work on your recall. And that means these devices by your bedside, pen, paper, and pencil. Because then they get really good at it. I can, when I need to, call certain people, whether they're crossed over or they're constructs of our consciousness or an archetype, a fictional character mm-hmm. that we're in love with that is so beloved by so many that it exists in the ether. And I can say, I need you to come talk to me and I need to work this shit out. You need to help me. I need your expertise, you know? So that is a very useful tool to problem solve in your life.
Well, I think the other thing is keep a record of everything that you can possibly keep a record of. Even if it doesn't make sense now, it may make sense later. Sometimes when your brain is working on a problem, especially when, let's say, your intuition is working on a problem, when you are first developing that, you only get bits and pieces, and you don't get them in order. So it's like puzzle pieces just get thrown out on a table in front of you. But if you keep the puzzle pieces, eventually you'll be able to start piecing that together to see the whole picture. So just keep writing the stuff down. It will start to illustrate some things for you. You will start to notice, I keep having this dream about my teeth falling out when I'm at this job where I'm having a hard time expressing myself because so-and-so keeps, stealing my moments, right? So I'm having these dreams where my teeth are falling out, and then I'm waking up in the morning, my jaw is sore. Well, it's because you've been grinding your teeth, biting your tongue, and trying to do everything you can do to keep from screaming about the injustice. So maybe it's time to scream about the injustice. And this stupid teeth falling out dream will stop.
Right.
But you won't know that until you start writing that stuff down and seeing the correlations.
See, and then there's also, there have been people that report that they have flying dreams. I do not ever recall having a flying dream.
Really?
Really. I have lots of swimming dreams, which are like flying underwater. Because I have lots of water dreams. Lots. And that has to do, I believe, in oversoul information and past lives. When I was a space leviathan on a planet made completely of water. But that's another show. But I have leaping dreams. So what I do is I can run a couple steps and then I leap and I can go really, really high. And I defy gravity. and I'm able to float, and then I float down. But it's only really probably, you know, half a length of a football field.
That's some Jedi shit.
Yeah, it's some serious Jedi shit. And I can do it like a couple times, and it's usually to get me away from something, or just because I like the feeling of like jumping up. And then it's usually for me, honestly, if I think about it, it's always for me to get a bird's eye view of the situation and the landscape, and then I come back down, you know?
So it's somehow like defying gravity for...
it's not for a super long time. It's not like I'm being dropped out of a plane and I'm going to die. It's a very gentle, like I leap and I'm suspended and I'm going a distance and I can concentrate on flying for a certain distance, but I know that it's like all math. I know that the amount of energy that I put into lofting myself, I will be able to traject a certain distance based on my math, and sometimes I can eke out just a little bit more before I start to descend.
Hmm.
Very mathematical. Yeah.
Yeah. Yay math.
Yay math.
So you're talking about like you're not having dreams about flying, reminding me of a dream where I lost my ability to fly. So this is the question I want to pose. Like, I will tell you the dream, but the question I want to pose is, what's the difference between a dream and a past life memory?
Oh, that's a good one.
So the dream is this. Once upon a time, I believe in a different lifetime, I had wings. And I was part of a sisterhood of other women who had wings. And we were a tribe of warrior women and protectors and healers and leaders, and we lived in an aerie high above the rest of civilization. But I flew into the aerie and was spending time there with my sisters, and later in the dream they had to come and get me because I was down on the ground in the Valley of the Men because the men had cut my wings off. And I'm getting emotional about it because I can feel it, and I swear to you guys, sometimes I still feel it. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and there's something more than an itching and less than a burn between my shoulder blades.
Mm-hmm.
So that's normally, I know that I've been having the flying dreams because I've been using my wings while I'm flying, and I swear my body must move. But I'm not sure that that was a dream. I think that that might have been a memory.
That's some powerful shit. I'm pretty sure then when you first saw the movie Maleficent, you lost your fucking mind.
Oh, I cried. I sobbed.
I just bawled my face off.
I sobbed. Because I believe in past lives. Surprise, surprise. May the woo be with you.
And also with you.
And I believe that I have lived on different worlds and that I have been different creatures. And in this world, I was a creature that had wings, that fought for people who couldn't fight for themselves, and that the people that we were fighting against ambushed me and took away the thing that made me, I thought, special. And I'm just not sure that I can classify it as a dream.
And you know what's the awesome thing? You don't have to.
Right.
Because it's your fucking life and your fucking brain and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, and it may just be that it's a story that I need to tell.
Yeah.
And it may be a metaphor for liberty. It may be a metaphor for owning my own power. It may be a metaphor for, you know, the sort of oppression that women experience, because in the dream it was men who took it from me. And it was my sisters who were trying to comfort me. So... there could have been a lot of stuff going on in my life at that time that made me need to see that message, that I was allowing somebody to take what I thought was my power away from me, but my power was never my wings.
Mm-hmm. See, that's like the deep shit that dreams can do for a person. That is so, it can be life transforming, really. I mean, at the same time, like that's the imagery, but then when we talk about what are your dreams? What do you want to do with your life? And, you know, if you got to think big. We talk about think big a lot, but that really means think about what's possible so you can manifest it in the being, and isn't that a dream?
Mm.
You know? I dreamt as a small child and all the way through my high school years in the college that I was going to be a famous singer. You know? Sung, like I had mentioned before, I sung my ABBA songs in front of my mirror, and I was the girl with golden hair, and thank you for the music, and I was going to be that person. And I didn't actually manifest that dream the way I thought, like I had said before, but that was still a dream. It's still, and dreams change based on value systems changing.
Right.
You know? And I think our actual nocturnal dreams, or the dreams you have if you're when you're asleep are very potent magic for us to harness to do what we need to do. But I think it's a skill that so many humans have zero interest in and zero understanding of and zero drive for. And I think it's a sad and tragic waste of the potential of humanity.
Well, I think we're not given permission to dream big. I think there's a lot of pressure to conform. And it starts with, you know, our public education system as children. Like, we don't educate children to their strengths. We educate them to pass a test to all fit in this mediocre box.
The average box.
Yeah. If we were educating them toward their strengths and we were giving them the tools they need to develop their innate talents and interests and skills, I think we would see the world populated with people who are blissfully engaged in doing what they are most interested and best at doing.
Well, I think it's really interesting, right before we came up to do the podcast, we were watching the news, and there was this sweet woman, and she's living somewhere here in Minnesota, but, or was that on the national news? I can't remember. But we didn't want to do a lot of, like, virus situation on this, but here's a really great example of human potential. So this woman was an engineer early in her career, and she did a full career of that and then became a neurological nurse.
Crazy.
And then she's also a seamstress. Like, she's just like, I'm going to do all these things because I can fucking do what I want, right?
Yeah.
So she's designed this mask for the viral protection that is effing brilliant, and it is literally quilting fabric that is sewed a specific way, a little bit more complex than some of the masks we're seeing. But then she slipped this little, like, folded up piece of tin foil through the bridge of the nose through a sleeve that was, you could see
a channel.
It's like a channel, like for boning or something. And then what you can do is you can, on the bridge of the nose, under the eyes where you really need to have the mask fit well, you just push the aluminum down and it fits snugly. And then when you want to wash it, you just take the tinfoil out, wash it, and then put new tinfoil in. I was like, fucking genius.
Brilliant.
And you know that shit came to her as an engineer in a dream. You know that came to her. Because her brain is already trained as an engineer to look at what could be possible.
Well, and solve problems.
Yeah.
Like, there's an engineering problem. And you know what? It was a beautiful, elegant, simple solution. I joke all the time that when there's an engineer, you'll have an over-engineered solution. But this
was just simple.
Simple and elegant, and anybody could do it.
And that's the thing that just amazes me about human potential. And, you know, that's why I'm fascinated with Joseph Campbell, and I'm fascinated with Jung, and just, like, the whole archetypal mind and the storytelling that we do, because we live and thrive on our stories, and our dream time is where we work out stories to help us explain the world to ourselves or ourselves to ourselves.
And that's interesting to me, because you were saying when you were a kid you were going to be the girl with the golden hair that sang to everybody, and I wanted to tell people stories.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that I had an inclination to be a writer, and I didn't know that I had an inclination to sing, and it has never occurred to me in all the time that I've been on the planet that what I may be is a bard who just doesn't know how to play a guitar.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a guitar to be a bard.
So that's sort of something new that's been opening up to me, is like, oh, that's right, when I was a kid, I wanted to tell stories. Like, I was the oldest of the grandchildren, and when the little ones were little, there was nothing I liked better than sitting around with them and reading their storybooks to them. I remember being in elementary school and being entered into a competition where we did a storytelling competition, and I got into the state finals because I told a story from Aesop's Fable about how a camel got its hump. And I remember while I was telling this story, sitting at the state fairground, that not only were the children paying attention to me, but the adults were absolutely captivated. And I don't think I was older than 8
mm-hmm.
when that happened. And I realized I had the ability to tell stories in a way that engaged people. And I've been looking all of my life to find a way to make that into something that makes the world better.
You do, because you exist.
Thank you.
But you know, that makes a really, really good segue into this next bit that I want to illuminate, because much like those of us who practice paganism in whatever form, whatever path is, we work with deity or deities, and we have altars that we have to feed and make offerings to on a regular basis to build relationship and cultivate favor and, you know, do tasks. Our dreams are the same way. Just like I would tell you ladies of Idisi, if you do not have a palette of sounds by listening to all kinds of different music and all kinds of different noises to try to figure out how you would make that noise with your mouth, you have to be able to comprehend it to make it come out of your pie hole. Same thing with dreams. If you spend your day not feeding your mind with data that is makes for rich food for your dreams to pull on, it means that your dreams aren't going to be potentially as vital or vibrant, because you're only giving it beige and mac and cheese and tater tot hot dish, and that's all you know. And so therefore, your dreams are going to be a lot, because that's all you're giving your brain. So I was very blessed to have a voracious, is that the word I'm looking for?
Well, continue. Give me context.
Appetite.
Yes, correct.
Okay. For data in terms of the written word. I mean, my uncle, my black sheep of an uncle, who was a transcendental meditationist and had his black belt in karate when I was like six. When I was eight, he handed me his beat up, masking tape together collection of Tolkien, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and the Hobbit. And just, I was out on the dock on the lake reading another book, and he just walks up to me and he says, "You need to read these, niece," and walked away and just plopped these books on the dock. And some of the pages were like loose.
Yep.
And I, that was early in the summer, and I was at the cabin with my grandparents for the summer, my brother and I devoured those books over the next couple of months. A lot of the words didn't make sense to me because it's Tolkien, in terms of like naming beget, beget, beget. It's kind of the same thing when I first was cracking into the Bible. I'm like, what the fuck? This is too much. But I was also the kid that would take our big, huge dictionary and be like, what are the words I want to learn today? Bloop. And, you know, and read Encyclopedia Britannica from the beginning to the end at least every couple of years. So if you don't feed your brain the sounds and the flavors, I'm the same. I'm very hedonistic with my food, too. Like, I need to have the textures and the tastes and blah. But remember your engagement party?
Yes.
I discovered the eating this cheese and then taking a sip of the champagne, and my whole body just stopped, and people were talking to me, and I said, shut it up. Open your pie hole. And they're like, what? I said, open your mouth. And I shoved this bit of cheese, and I'm like, now drink some of that. And they were like, oh, my God. And then that, like, went like a plague around the entire party. Eat this cheese with this. I'm lactose intolerant. Doesn't matter.
It's worth it. Worth it.
And I became known at the wedding as, oh, you're that cheese lady. My work here is done.
I mean, there are worse things to be than a goddess of cheese.
Right. Yeah. But, if you don't, feed your brain with the data that can then it can play with in the dream time, it's sad.
I think what we're saying is, once you get to go out into the world again, don't take the same route to and from work every day.
Mm-mm.
Have some adventures. Get some new data. Don't have lunch at the same place every day. Go to a museum. Look at some new stuff. Go listen to some music that you would never in a million years listen to. Try some opera.
Fusion jazz. It'll blow your fucking mind.
Try some fusion jazz. Try some opera. Try some, crazy, rockabilly. Just try everything. Get new data in there and change the way that you think. Sometimes you can't solve your problems because you don't have any new way to look at it.
I think this whole experience of the virus is a really interesting, because it's a disruptor. I mean, it's the rune of disruption, for sure, you know?
And really, I was feeling Issa, personally.
Well, Issa, as the, you know, rune of ice, she's about stillness, which, you know, I think people are experiencing some of that as they're, arrested in this. But, you know, the rune of disruption is lightning strike, really.
Well, maybe I'm embracing Issa because I need to be still right now.
Oh, there's that. There's that, too. But it's this disruptor, and I think people have an ability, because we are already shook out of our comfort zone a bit, embrace that crack in your dike.
That chink in the armor
that you have can be busted further open by changing up your habits and trying things that would be scary to you or would be distasteful, because you don't know. And that also helps us have a better perspective on how to be in congruence with each other. You're not going to agree with everybody. It's okay for people not to think like you.
And it's okay for you to disagree and still be friends.
Yeah. There's some shit going on in India right now that is just horrific. Like, people being taken and their whole families are disappearing because of the anti-Muslim conflict that's happening, and they're using this virus in their corruptified government to, like, disappear people.
Yeah, the corona cloak for the Gestapo.
It's awful. And I know that firsthand from some friends that are having to experience, and they're here and they can't help, and they're just, like, absolutely heartbroken because it's awful. We can do better. And that starts with us being able to dream a better space. And that's a lot of woo-woo, and I get it, and, you know...
Look, collective consciousness is a real thing.
It's a real thing.
We share dream archetypes because we share DNA. On a very base level, we are humans. We share DNA. We share ancestral archetypes and lessons. Like, these are the magics that are within ourselves. We can connect with one another on levels that we couldn't even verbalize. I know that it is possible to dream collectively with other people. I have done it.
Oh, I have done it. That freaky goat man dream. I shared that dream with some friends when they came up to me, because it was on a weekend out at a festival, and a couple of them came up to me and said, this is going to sound really weird. And I said, evil freaky goat headed men? They're like, what the fuck? And that motorcycle. I'm like, right? That was some freaky shit. That was when I started believing, oh, that's how soul pods work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was some trippy shit.
I've collectively dreamed with somebody within the last 24 hours. It was mm-hmm. unintentional, and it was, like, weird stuff. Like, I was dreaming I was taking guitar lessons. Look, guys, I can't read music. I have short, stubby fingers. I'm never going to play guitar. Maybe. Maybe I might be able to manage, like, a ukulele.
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 But I'm never going to play a guitar. But I was dreaming I was taking guitar lessons, and somebody else was dreaming that I was playing a bass. And it was bizarre. Like, the same night, the same kind of dream. I have dreamed where I have reached out literally across the globe and saw somebody standing on their balcony in Australia and described to them exactly what they were wearing and what they look like, only to have them go, that's absolutely what happened.
See, but was that a dream or was that an astral projection?
Who knows?
That's like, I haven't yet seen a whole lot of evidence that astral projection and dreaming aren't in the same
bucket. I think it's the same
part of your brain. Yeah. Because, like, I have, what's so funny is all the friends I haven't talked to forever will call me or send me an email or a message and be like, I need to talk to you. I'm like, okay. So then I'm like, do you need to call me? Yes, please. So they'll give them my number, which they didn't have before. They'll call me and they'll say, so I don't really know how to say this. I said, did you have a sexual dream about me? They're like, how did you know? And I said, kind of one of my things in my past life that I also believe in was sacral priestess. So talk to me. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you're safe. And they'll tell me what's going up, and then we analyze the dream together, and I'll, like, give them a little, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist by any mean, but I do know how to priestess. And so I help them through that process, and they're like, but I don't understand. I'm like, well, you don't have to understand it. Did you resolve what you needed to resolve? I'm simply a tool that helps you.
Yeah, sometimes the sex dreams are not about the sex.
Nope. But it's hard for people when they don't have a skill set built up to understand that's what's going on, because that's how the mind manifests the resolution or the conflict arises. So
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. My sex dreams about Nick Cave are totally about the sex. Hi, Nick. How are you? By the way, this is somebody I'm wanting to meet. So if anybody knows somebody who knows somebody who knows Nick Cave, please start working those connections for your girl. Thanks.
I had a really intense dream experience. Well, let me back up. Back in the day when we were in college, my friend Damon was in this amazing experimental opera at the Southern Theater called Mirabella's Numbers. And he's going to kill me because I don't remember what famous writer, poet, but it was a gay poet, smoking jacket and all, and his lover, husband, partner. They have a famous place in the Florida Keys that everybody goes and visits. But anyway.
Oscar Wilde?
No, it wasn't Oscar Wilde. It was more current, like okay. In the early 1900s. I've tried to look it up. I can't even remember. Anyway, he and his partner and some of his friends did a whole bunch of Ouija board work, and he wrote it down. And so they did this opera based on their experiences with talking with the spirit board.
Okay.
Okay. And all the spirits that were there. And my friend Damon is an amazing, amazing singer. I'm going to totally link your shit to him. James Merrill. Yes, thank you. Your Google Foo is strong. I'm pretty sure that's who it was. So this beautiful opera just wrecked me. And it really was, and it was the dike crack for me, you know. Because we then started working on, we made our own spirit board. We'd done a bunch of research. And my friend Jennifer and Damon and I would go back to her apartment because she lived on the Seven Corners up there on the old Howard Johnson's hotel.
Oh,
my God, that place was haunted. But we would go there. This was the winter. The fall before the big, huge blizzard in 1991 we had on Samhain.
Oh, so right before I moved here.
Yes. That was exactly when that was happening. Because I remember trudging through the snow because I had to park and then walk like a block and a half to get into the hojo. And so we were doing Ouija board work and we ended up having some experiences. And so I got to kind of know how to play a little bit in that spirit realm, which is not to be fucked with.
I was going to lean in and say, now look, if you are inclined to send us messages about how spirit boards are evil and portals to hell and blah, 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 save it. Okay?
No. Cool.
It's a tool. It's a communication device. It's just like anything else. If you don't know how to parlay with spirit, don't.
Mm-hmm. And we fucking did not.
Because things will happen.
Yep.
If you do know how to parlay with spirit, have at. You know, do what you got to do to protect yourself and do what you got, you know, your things. I've gotten to a point, like, they don't work for me at all anymore. Spirit talks to me through automatic writing and through dreams because it's faster, I think.
Right. And I got to that when we did this for a very long time and brought some other people into it and did it for a long time. That's a whole other show, but just in a quick reference, it was something that opened me up to be able to hear my subconscious, unconscious mind as well as those beings that wanted to have a chat with me.
I just wanted to put the disclaimer in here. Don't bother sending us messages because I'm not going to tell you how to witch. Don't you dare try and tell me how to do it.
Right. So, but what was fascinating about that for me in the dream time, because that was food. I have this weird ability at times when I'm lucid dreaming. If there are times where certain energies will come and that we play this game. Archangel Michael does this with me. He will play a game where he will disguise himself as other people, but I can see him like he's wearing saran wrap. Like, and he has a certain face of a certain person that shall not be named, but that I always know when he's in his quote-unquote true face with me, because it's the face we've agreed is his root for me. And he does this thing where he'll try to be these other people. Like, I'm looking around the tree going, I fucking see you, dude. Like, but, and then he laughs and we carry on with whatever we need to do. But I have another soul that I have connected with over the last couple years. We talk about sex dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this person exists on this plane, but there is this agreement And this is some woo-woo shit, so may the woo be with you.
And also with you.
Because it's some woo-woo shit, but I believe this to be a soul pod thing. There is an energy that is definitely supposed to possibly be twin flamey soul. I hate that word, soulmate, but whatever. But it's a person that's supposed to be interacting with me at some point in this lifetime. And every once in a while, we'll hook up, literally, in the ether. And I'll be, and I always look at him and say, don't jump the timeline, dude. If you fuck this up this lifetime, I'm pissed. And so we kind of have like, we'll hold hands and be all cutesy with each other, but we don't do anything else because we know that we can't. And I don't know if he's not ever going to be corporeal this lifetime, but I actually felt for the first time in a dream we had shared that I went, oh, this is what this is supposed to feel like. So now, as a person who doesn't settle usually, I especially am not fucking settling, knowing that I know it's possible. So again, like, dreams can be incredibly powerful, and I encourage you all to try to work on how you can harness your unconscious mind. Because here's one thing about the unconscious mind that is just a psychological fact. If you want to change a habit, you have to go talk to your unconscious mind and get your unconscious mind on board with it, because your conscious mind alone is not going to change anything unless your unconscious mind is like, yeah, that's a cool plan, let's do that. Because your unconscious mind is driving the bus.
Right. So,
period.
Yeah, this is a thing that when I talk to people who want to quit doing something like smoking,
mm-hmm.
it's not enough for you to go get patches and meditate and like say that you don't want to smoke anymore. You have to tell yourself that your identity is a non-smoker.
Mm-hmm.
Because as long as your identity is a smoker, you're going to be a smoker. You have to get into it on a subconscious level. I am a person who only breathes clean air.
And that's like, that's a process where you can, if you're trying to overcome something that you just have tried everything, leverage your dream time.
Yep.
Go meet with your unconscious self and be like, no, seriously, why the fuck isn't this changing?
Yep.
I really want to change this. And your unconscious mind's going to have to be convinced that it's their idea.
Yep.
Or, you know, or that it's just not going to happen.
Or it's going to say, well, this is the reason why you do this, so why aren't you taking care of this problem?
Exactly. It will illuminate for you where the root is.
Right? You go to tobacco because you have a rage issue. So you keep grabbing the tobacco to quell your rage. What are you going to do about your rage issue then?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a conversation that you need to be having deep down inside. So why am I full of rage?
Well, and it's relationship building. And it, you know, like, the dreams are your brain's way of working through the problem solving. Your brain is a computer that is only going to churn through data it's given.
Mm-hmm.
And data that it can access. It's not necessarily, it thinks it's in charge, but it's fucking not in charge. You know? But it will drive a lot of behavior if you don't get the program in check.
I think some of the most transformational, like the most transformational experience I had in my life was that I went somewhere that I needed a passport, and I got to see how other people live.
Mm-hmm.
I got to see how other cultures engage and what their values are and how different and how similar it is to the culture that I grew up in. So I'm hoping that when we get to a point where we are able to move about freely, that people will travel, meet some new people, see how people live and how people commune with one another in a different way. Talk to them about the language of their dreams and the language of prophecy and the language of their intuition and find out what you have in common.
And I think that's what's really an interesting and beautiful side effect that I don't really think is a side effect. I really believe it's more the purpose, if this vector spore is supposed to have any kind of purpose. There are so many people that are reaching out on the ether because that's all we got,
mm-hmm.
that there's a lot of friendships that are being forged in crisis.
Or renewed.
And renewed, because there's a lot of people checking up on loved ones maybe they haven't talked to from high school, mm-hmm. and just making sure everybody's okay. Even though we have this false sense of illusion that, you know, this false sense of that we're connected through the Facebooks and the Instagrams and stuff, we're not. We're all putting on our own little show and hoping the monkeys come watch us best. You know?
It's not the same as picking up the phone and
right.
checking in and having a real conversation that comes from your heart.
Or look in somebody when you can in the eyeballs and be like, how are you really? But there's, you know, there's going to be people with these internet connections. I've got friends all over the planet that I will probably never physically be in the presence of because of economics or
yeah, I don't think
whatever.
I'm going to be getting to Australia and
yeah,
probably not getting back to Italy anytime soon and probably not going to Ireland this year. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, but those people that say, oh, internet relationships don't mean anything, then you know what? I think the problem is this is my judgment, but it's the quality of the relationships you yourself build that give you that data. I have amazingly magical, enriching, powerful relationships with people wherever I am. That's me. Because that's an absolute top of the needs chart for me in this experience as a human. Because I can't fucking do this shit without you people.
Well, in a roundabout way, the internet is responsible for me meeting you. It's a bizarre tangle of connections, but I met my beastie on the internet, and she stayed after me for years and years about coming out to the Renaissance Festival,
mm-hmm.
and I refused and refused and refused, and then finally I broke down and I went, and I was there in a capacity outside of entertainment, and then I decided I wanted to be in entertainment, and then I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that connection that I made with somebody on the internet in a chat room when I still had mobile dial-up.
Right.
That we're best friends to this day. It's been, our children are 23 and 24 years old. So we've been friends for like 23 years.
And then I got to know her and love her to death.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so that, you can't tell me that friendship isn't real. I adore her and she has been a sister to me. And that relationship started before I ever saw her face.
Yeah. And the same, I just said to our friend Salm last night, Some, for whatever reason, saw something I was doing with, I think it was Idissy or something, and all of a sudden this total stranger Facebook messaged me and says, hey, we need to meet, and I need to have some coffee with you and look at your face. Literally. And I was like, did my little Google Foo research of this person. I'm like, okay, so she agreed to come to a coffee house near my apartment, and I let some people, I'm like, I don't know, this is like, what is this deal? And as soon as we saw each other, it was like, sister! And now she's in Boston and I miss the shit out of her and we have 3-hour conversations and shit. But, you know, we also do, you know, high priestess of yumminess and sword sister and scholar, and I just, I wouldn't trade that for nothing. Thank you, interwebs magic.
I cannot even begin to imagine what my life would be like if I had never discovered the magic little box.
Yeah.
I'm just so thankful for it, and I am thankful for it right now.
And you know what? Somebody dreamt that into being. Just saying.
I'm going to let that sit for a second. That's crazy. I can't imagine what the world would be like without it, and I don't want to live in a world without this connectivity. But I also don't want to live in a world that relies solely upon this for connectivity.
Which is a huge test that we're going through right now. But at the same time, it'll be very curious. Like I was saying to my sisters of Mythos, who I live with, last night, I said, you know, anybody that throws a party this fall to early winter that would usually not have, like, people go, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to that party. And then they don't, like, oh, sorry, I missed your party. Everybody's going to go to fucking parties. Like, it's going to be like, oh, you have a party? Oh, can I come? What can I bring? I want to, oh, because we now have an appreciation for how valuable that is.
Right? I'm already planning a big-ass house party. I just need a big-ass house.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't been to, like, a real honest-to-goodness house party with a band and people wilding out in probably 15 years. And I am so looking forward to it, you guys. I think there's going to be live stream video.
As big as Greyhaven is, we discovered with my 50th birthday party, it is not big enough.
I have a location in mind. I just haven't talked to this friend about it yet.
Oh, wow. I am also having a virtual Rebel Cheese Whores virtual party on the 13th of April. If you are interested, you can go to my public page called The Whores of Fromage, FROMAGE. And we only have a half an hour, but there's a challenge there, and you can check it out. And if you're interested in being invited to the Zoom, you can send me a Facebook message and with your email address so I can get you going. But it's
we shall eat cheese,
we shall eat cheese
drink
together
wine.
And make yummies with the stuffs and the pairings and the yums and orgasm about the fromage for I am the Madame Creme Toscano. Because, yeah, but
I'm feeling
a whole other show.
I'm feeling some St. Andre in my future.
I know. Well, here was another thing. This is what sucks. Before all this happened, I was over at Hy-Vee looking for St. Andre, and we had this huge conversation, with lots of obscenities about the tariffs that had blocked a lot of the imported cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I got exposed to some cheeses that I wouldn't I flashed these cheeses with my titties.
No, the cheeses you got exposed to. Did the cheese open your blouse or wait?
Cheese showed me its inner goodness. With it flashing me, and my titties got all excited, and my lady bits were like, woo! And the cheesemongers at the store were all about it. It was fantastic. It was a great time. With some lady that was laughing the whole time, because I was like, this is my do not fuck with my cheese tariff face, people.
Yeah, I don't like it. Stop screwing with my cheese and my wine, please.
So the purpose of this party is if you can acquire some excellent fromage in this crisis, yay, but I don't want anybody to, go endanger themselves. So, what's in your house, even if it's fucking Velveeta, make it. You have to describe your cheese in the voice of Robin Leach of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous narration while you've plated it.
Oh, I'm going to have to practice.
I know. It's going to be great.
I was hoping to just ginger grant it up and just, talk sexy to the
cheese.
Well,
that's fine, too. That's fine, too. I'll take it. Everybody's got to get it in a half an hour because that's all I got. But, anyway, that's our rebel cheese whore party that's happening. But that came out of a dream. I woke up and it was like, you need to have a rebel virtual cheese party. And went, I do. Thanks, magic.
Indeed. I cannot wait for the cheese. It's going to be so lovely. And I can't wait to hear more about your dreams and tell you more about mine.
Yep. If you want to get into contact with us, you can reach us at spiritualfrequencyhosts, as in angelic, with an S, at gmail.com. You can check us out at thespiritualfrequency.com and check out our other episodes of podcast. We are on episode 10.
Holy cow, that's 10.
It's 10. Congratulations. And I want to give a shout out to my Joxer the Mighty Boy who left us a year ago today. Tomorrow's his year and a day celebration, but I miss you, my little kitten monster face.
We love you, Poofy Pants.
And we miss your face. And Orpheus was up here earlier, but he was, they literally tag-teamed each other in and out. It was fucked up. But my heart is still shattered, but I know it will be filled even deeper because I love you, love you, love you. So to all those we have loved here and beyond, may I see you in the dream time. May I see you in the dream time.
Oh, yeah. We got some adventures to go on, you guys.
We do.
Just stay tuned. We're going to have so many magical adventures. We're so glad that you're here with us, and we can't wait to get reconnected with you next week on the spiritual frequency.